Small businesses are the cornerstones of our local communities, and small business owners are hardworking and passionate people who are chasing down their ambitions while there's a lot on the line. So, let Verizon champion your small business dreams. Whether you own a small business, are scaling one, or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon business experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon business expert. Plus, Verizon business experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon, well, they've got you back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business. When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. Real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'm Gary O'Reilly.
And I'm Chuck Nice.
And this is Playing with Science. Gary O'Reilly.
And I am Chuck Nice.
And this is Playing with Science.
Yeah. Woo! Yes!
Yeah!
Yes!
And today, sports and science are colliding here in Austin, Texas for South by Southwest. We are so, yes! Give it up!
Excellent.
Great place to be, great festival, and we have some superb guests. One guy has basically done it all. Another,
dude, I'm not
just
a guest. I'm the
host.
Seen
it all,
what are you talking about?
And another who knows it all. And then there's Chuck and myself. Right, let's get to the business. The gentleman on the lovely Regency sofa, Holden Kushner. Absolutely.
Holden,
thank you very much.
Please, give it
ladies
up.
And gentlemen, Holden Kushner,
host of our Major League on TuneIn 90
right.
program.
And I will be JP's interpreter today because he only speaks Spanish in public.
Sweet!
This is going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, my God. Right. This just got so interesting. Yep. So, now, Holden, you are the host of, please.
MLB on Tune Lab. We talk baseball, but science is really colliding with baseball now. So, it's kind of cool that we're here doing this.
Very cool.
Because,
very cool.
Right.
All right.
And so
the other guy sitting here who does not speak any English, Gary, who is this? Because he couldn't understand what I just said.
I think there are people here that know who this guy is. JP Arancibia.
Yes!
JP.
Yeah, well deserved. A man who has just in the last couple of months retired from Major League Baseball. A catcher. A man whose records still stand. You walk away from professional sport and you're forgotten very quickly. This man, that will not be the case.
Just so you can make JP very comfortable, you can interpret this. Mucho gusto. Okay?
He says... thank you very much, I think.
Gracias.
Yeah,
gracias.
No problemo.
This is going to take an awful lot longer, isn't it?
Exactly.
Right, and joining us via video call is the one, the only, Charles Liu, astrophysicist extraordinaire. Give it up, please.
As always, a tremendous pleasure to be here with you guys.
Chuck Liu, my friend, how are you?
Hey there. Life is very good, thank you. Waiting for baseball season to start.
I know you're a big fan, Chuck. You're like a huge baseball fan, aren't you? A sports
love
fan.
The sport.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
It's great stuff. And it really is true that the JP and other people who are at that highest level of performance in professional sports, their brains are working all the time to optimize things like angles, forces, accelerations, decelerations, a little bit of everything. Looking forward to talking about it.
Very nice, man. Very nice. JP, did you know this about your own brain? Were you aware that your brain is always optimizing information?
I know that my brain is more like a squirrel's brain.
I can optimize. I'm here one second, I'm there the other. I don't know. I have a very ADD-like mind, but I guess that I optimize it pretty quickly because I can. Baseball comes pretty fast, so you got to be able to do it.
Right on.
No,
did you, during your career, JP, feel that science had any role to play? Or was it a case of that, you know what, this is what I do, I do it?
Yeah, I never thought about it scientifically until I started sucking. And then I had to start really looking into why, yeah. other than just mechanics and understanding physics side of it. Now, obviously, in baseball, there's a lot of spin rate and trajectory, how you launch the ball, home runs, all these different things. So I think I was a little late to the party. That's why I'm 31, and I was I called it a quits, but it was still, I mean, now it's, like you said, the worlds are colliding, baseball and science and just sports and science in general.
Okay, Chuck, let's bring Charles in and kind of break down exactly what JP would have gone through in his 9-to-5, right? Mm-hmm. Sitting there, hunched behind plate. Charles?
Yeah, here's the deal.
Fastball, talk me through it. Spin rates, everything.
Fastball, 90 miles an hour.
How many miles per hour, Chuck?
Let's say 90.
Okay.
Nice round number.
Nice
okay,
round
that's
number.
A nice fastball. Although I understand, JP, you threw about 75, right?
I threw about 75, yeah, when we were getting killed by the Tampa Bay Rays.
Okay, so now you guys are talking inside baseball right
no,
now.
No. JP's one of the few privileged Major League Baseball players in history, both to pitch and to hit and to catch.
Yeah.
All the same game.
Pitch and catch in the
really
same game.
Cool.
Did anyone in our audience know this about JP? Did they?
Yeah.
Actually, quite a few people do know this. This is a cool thing,
right.
Man. Holden.
Yeah.
Yo.
Did he do it well?
No, he was horrible. How did you do in your inning? I in all seriousness, I did not. I knew that you would. I kind of knew you pitch. How did you do in that inning? Because 75 miles an hour ain't going to get it done.
No, actually, it gets it done because no one's used to that speed. So if you're under the speed, that's what works. So it was after the game. They're like, JP, so you were throwing knuckleballs? And I was like, no, that wasn't my fastball. I just didn't want to. But I gave up one hit. And then it's funny, ironically, the last guy that I faced,
yeah.
Right.
He was a guy that I played with my entire life through Little League, through the whole thing.
Uh-oh,
and now all of a sudden I'm laughing because this guy that I'm about to throw a ball, that I'm praying, like, please don't just hit me. That was the only thing I was scared. I'm used to wearing equipment. Covered up. I was like, please just don't hit the ball back at me. And I got out of the inning. And then, of course, after everyone's like interviewing me about, how'd you get these guys out? I'm like, dude, it's because the hitters wanted to get out. Whenever I faced a position player, I was like, okay, this is a lose-lose situation. You hit a homer, everyone's like, dude, you're a D-bag. Like, you just took this guy. and then if you strike out, everybody makes fun of you.
Right.
So the only way that you can do anything good is kind of walk. So when I used to face position players, I would just try to put the ball in play and get out because I was like, just get it over with. Just give the bat away.
Nice.
Well, that's so all sweet. Right. That means your career ERA is 0.00, isn't it?
That is correct. That is.
Good for you, man. Yeah. Way to go. Okay, I'm sorry. Where were we?
Hit
okay,
us,
JP's crouched. Yeah. He's crouched behind the plate, 90-mile-an-hour fastball coming toward him, 60 feet 6 inches away. That's 0.46 seconds for him to react, okay? Now, he's got to set up a target, but if something happens, if the guy throws low when he was expecting high, if he throws inside when he's expecting outside, he has less than half a second to jump in front of this ball. And the first question I have for you, JP, something that I've wanted to ask catchers for a really long time, how important actually is the target? Does it actually matter where you put your glove in order to stop the ball or in order for the pitcher actually to pitch a good pitch? Does it matter at all, scientifically speaking?
Shoot, that's the question. You're the scientist. I don't
but, right. Well. So what Chuck – and it's a very good question, Chuck. When you see a catcher after he makes the call, so you're in that crouch, and I know what Chuck is talking about. You're in that crouch, and then you make the call. Right? You give your little finger sign, but then you shift position after you give that sign.
Yeah.
Does that mean anything? Or is that some kind of like, I don't know, Peyton Manning, like Omaha, Omaha? Is that what is that?
I mean, there is part of it that's not real. There's certain things that you're trying to mask. Obviously in baseball, you're trying to get, and if I'm setting up in and there's a guy in the dugout that sees me set up in early, most of the time setting up in is going to be a fastball, and they may be relaying that. So there's a lot of different things that you try to do to mask that. But to his question about the target, yeah, I mean, you try to give a guy a visual. That's what they, you know, you supposedly. Some guys, you talk to some pitchers, and they'll say that on a breaking ball, they're not aiming at my mitt, they're aiming at my mask. Mm-hmm. Because they,
is that because they don't like you? Is that
that's because they want to start it there, because if it's a breaking ball starts at my mask, then it's going to be probably in the strike zone when it gets to me. So different things. I think the biggest one is, you know how when guys stand up and the fastball up, I think that's the biggest target that guys, because you're always taught to throw down. So when the count's late, what we try to do is we try to throw the fastball up, because if the fastball is on the same plane, and I'm sure you could speak to this too, is if the fastball's on the same plane, if I throw a breaking ball, I want to try to make the breaking ball look to our eyes
like it's going to stay straight the entire time.
So if there was a side view, the fastball would be straight, and then you'd want the breaking ball to come right off of that. So once you're later in the count, and there's, you know, most of the time it's breaking balls, they throw fastballs up for that reason, because you want them to think that's a breaking ball or whatever, and they chase it, and it's an easy out. But sometimes if you don't put the target up there, they're so used to throwing down that now all of a sudden, if I'm like this, if I don't do this,
right,
the thing that sucks about a catcher is that anything that goes wrong,
it's your fault.
It's my fault.
Right.
So it's like, JP, why didn't you have your glove up? I'm like, dude, the dude's making $20 million. He can throw the ball where he needs to throw the ball, but it's my fault. So that's that. I mean, yeah, there's certain times, and again, there's certain times where I'll pretend like I'm gonna throw a ball in the dirt, just show that I'm throwing, and I know that it's gonna be a fastball up. Because again, you're always trying to hide things that you're doing because the other team is trying to relay it.
All about camouflage. Hey, Chuck. So can you do a favor? Because now JP just mentioned two things.
Okay.
Fastball up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And he mentioned breaking ball. Uh-huh. So from a physics standpoint,
yes.
How do those two things happen? One, how do you get a fastball to go up? And how do you get the breaking ball to break and drop?
And what forces are in play? Yeah.
And what's that?
Yeah, we'll start.
What forces are in play?
And what,
yeah.
We'll
start with the breaking ball first. Yeah, what forces are in play? A baseball, as you know, has got the laces on it, right? And so the raised laces theoretically allow for when a ball is coming through and you're holding it in just a certain way and you spin it as you are throwing it, what's going to happen is you're going to create airflow that goes on one side of the ball different from the other side of the ball. And your goal is to make it so that it'll push the ball away from a straight line and go sideways, right? A simple example, if you've all played wiffle ball before, you know that the ball's got holes in it, right?
Yes.
It's a plastic thing. And so you hit the thing, and the ball just kind of floats up and does weird stuff back and forth, left and right, and it makes it nice and soft so the kids can catch it without hurting themselves. But in the major leagues, you have the real ball, and it actually hurts if it hits your face, right? And you have these little laces that are causing the break to happen. There have been actually a number of master's theses, not quite PhD as far as I know, but master's theses trying to explain why the ball actually moves. Because if you just do a first order physics calculation, those laces aren't high enough to affect the smooth flow of air over a ball to cause it to break. But it does break. Breaking balls do break, right, JP? It's not just an illusion.
Yeah, and to bring up to that point too, and I'm sure you can answer this, is are there quite a bit of like people who watch baseball here? Is there anybody that watches baseball for the most part? All right.
Yeah. So baseball fans? Yeah.
You guys ever, you guys ever realize, let's say when a ball hits the dirt, do you guys realize we always throw it out? You guys
I've
ever
seen
noticed that?
That?
Or a ground ball, they throw
I just
it
thought,
out?
I just thought Major League Baseball was extremely wasteful.
No, we are economical. But so what happens is scuffs on the ball, right? So if I get a ball in the dirt, mm-hmm. right? Pitchers used to tell me, like, don't throw it out until the umpire is like, throw it out. Because what happens is, and you could speak to this, is if the ball's scuffed, which scuffed means on the ball, if there's a scratch on it,
right.
Or some guys scratch it themselves, which is also known as cheating.
Yeah.
But,
wait, who was the guy who used to have a little
Phil
piece
Negro.
Of sandpaper in his glove?
Phil Negro.
Why you got to be black, man? What's up?
Yeah, hey, that's messed
up. No, I'm joking.
Man.
Phil Negro.
Well, he's quite white.
I know.
But that's
so no, really. But yeah, and so he was actually caught like taking a little sandpaper and.
Well, so what happens is so there's some pitchers that know how to use that, and then what they do is they put the scratched part of the ball a certain way depending on which way they wanted to move. So there was pitchers that I knew if there was a ground ball or if I was throwing a ball down to second, if I can skip it and get it to be scuffed, I would call a pitch, and I could tell instantaneously that the ball, without looking at it, that it was scuffed because I knew the ball wouldn't move. His normal fastball wouldn't move, or his normal cutter wouldn't move the same amount.
That's if insane. Not,
so that's why when you guys watch the game and you're like, dude, why are they always throwing all these balls out? It's because literally these guys are so good, and you can speak about the physics, but as soon as you get a ball that's scuffed and all of a sudden the ball moves 2 inches, if it's scuffed, it goes 4 inches.
Yeah,
which is a huge
difference. That's a lot of movement. That's a big difference.
Yeah, it's like kicking the valve on a penalty shot in soccer, right? You're just causing the ball and the air to interact in an unpredictable way based on the fact that the ball is not perfectly spherical. Now, the rising fastball, Chuck and Gary, that's the question I want to ask JP also, because physically you're not supposed to be able to throw a rising fastball. All right.
Wait a minute. Are you saying this as an actual physicist?
Yeah.
That
from a physics perspective, when you are throwing a fastball, see, the mound is a little bit higher than home plate,
okay,
right? So when you're throwing from the pitcher to the batter into the batter's box, well, not in the batter's box, hopefully just in the strike zone, right? You're actually throwing a ball downhill a little tiny bit, right? There is literally no way to cause the ball to go upward. So a rising fastball, most physicists are quite certain, is actually an illusion. It's just a fastball that doesn't go downward. And so it looks like it goes upward. And I would love to ask a major league player who has experience if actually a ball, to his knowledge, JP, has ever actually dipped down and back up again purposefully.
No.
Yes, we're right.
Yeah, you can't. So he's right. He's right in the sense, because what happens is in like – and you can correct me if I'm wrong. I think from when the guy releases the ball to when it gets to the catcher, the ball drops 8 inches.
Okay.
Okay, so what the misnomer is that it's a rise fastball, but it's not rising. It just doesn't drop as much.
I gotcha.
And so that's the biggest thing. And so our whole career, if I have done as a kid everything, you're used to the ball coming down. If I can find somebody that spins the ball at a high enough rate that the ball doesn't drop –
As much as it would normally drop.
Yeah, because the eyes, your eyes, I'm just used to, again, and like you said, we have 0.4 seconds to make a decision. So literally, when I was hitting, I mean, you have to trust your eyes. So as soon as this ball comes out, what's coming to your head, other than the squirrel stuff, what's coming to my head is like what the ball, what it's doing, what the ball, where the ball is going to be when I swing, how am I going to make contact?
Right.
So what these guys do, and this is why guys that are throwing 90 miles an hour, they blow guys away compared to a guy that's throwing 98, because the guy that's throwing 91, out of his hand, you might think is going to end up here when it's necessarily – it's ending up here.
So really the rising fastball is just a not-dropping fastball. That's the real name of it, the not-dropping fastball.
That's what we're going to start calling it.
Yeah.
There you go. And that's all down to the spin rate that a pitcher will –
Charles, you're
up.
Charles, can you tell us why is the spin rate so important to support what JP is talking about in the not dropping fastball, which it shall forever now be known as?
A spin rate of a ball is the most important thing that determines whether or not it will interact with the air smoothly or unsmoothly, right? JP was saying also, after the spin, there's nicks in the ball, you know, scuffs, yep, or say the laces and things like that can make the difference. If you want to have something not move, you've got to try to make it spin as little as possible. In some cases, as fast as possible, mm-hmm, right? The faster you go, the less likely it is that the ball's motion will be influenced by random air activity. You want it to spin in a strange and unusual way in order to make it work and create breaks in the thing. So we could ask JP from the batting point of view. And let me say, while I have a moment, I still remember hearing in the news in your debut with the Toronto Blue Jays when you hit a home run in your first at bat and then went on to hit another home run the same day, four hits on your opening day, including two home runs. I don't know if anyone ever else has done that before, but I remember hearing that on the news. That was pretty amazing. I want you to know that, JP. So it's a real pleasure talking to you. Yes.
I set the bar too high.
Thank you. Yeah.
Nice stuff.
All right, Charles.
Okay. So let me get back to the hitting stuff. Okay, just real quick. Oh, sorry. Yes. So you watching a ball coming in when you're about to hit it, if you see the ball spinning fast, you literally can't see the spin, right? If it's when it's slower, that's when you can see the spin and go, uh-oh, this is a knuckler coming in. You have to be careful with it. If you can't see the spin, that means it's spinning so quickly that it's likely not to break, and therefore you can probably predict where the ball is going to be when it gets over the plate, right?
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. You want to see out of the hand. If you see any kind of laces, any kind of red, usually it's an off-speed pitch, or as opposed to if you see more of a cue ball, you know that it's going to be a fastball. When you're not doing well, it all looks like a cue ball. So then, then you're really in trouble. That's how you know your eyes aren't working. But yeah, no, to your point, I mean, you'll see it because I'm learning because of the amount of spin out of the hand. I could tell, okay, that was something that's not a fastball. It would compute in my head.
Cool, man. Very cool. Well, we got to take a break. So
yeah, we have, I think, ball-eye coordination.
Wow, that sounds very gay.
The net just, that's got Chuck's interest.
I like it a lot.
Certainly. So
I am so into this right now.
We are going to take a break.
I am so into ball-eye coordination.
Yeah.
Dropping
so,
balls.
While Chuck works with that, and he might have to work on that on his own, we'll take a break. And when we come back, we will be speaking to Holden. He's been very patient. So stick with us. Back in a second.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back.
Yes.
Thank you, yes. Gary O'Reilly.
And I'm Chuck Dice.
And you've heard it all before, haven't you? Yes, this is Playing with Science. And we are here at South by Southwest, and we are privileged to be here. with some really rather special guests. Holden Kushner from iTunes and JP Arancibia, former Major League Baseball player. And as I said before, the one and only Charles Liu. Right, talked about pitching, Charles. I think JP's got a little bit of an interest in batting. 80 home runs, by the way. This man here. Total envy.
Yeah,
total
80 home runs.
Envy, 80.
But holds the record. Still holds the record for what? 23 home runs for the Toronto Blue Jays as a catcher?
Yeah.
That still stands, right?
Still stands.
Okay. 23 in Not one bad. Season. Incredible. And as Charles alluded to before the break, on his major league debut, first ball, home run. Wow.
Wow. What do you think when that happens? Like, okay, so it's your major league debut. It's your first at bat. You get up there and you pop a home run. Do you just say to yourself, like, damn, it is all downhill from here?
Yeah. No, I remember I was not really nervous. I was just ready for the opportunity.
Yeah, because it's been a long road to get to a major league game.
Yeah, I mean, the minor leagues and all these different stops that we have in baseball that, unfortunately, people only see the major leagues. A lot
the
of
New
great.
Hampshire Fisher Cats springs to mind.
Yeah, let's talk about, let's not talk about, but Las Vegas was where I was at the longest, and that's where I almost died a few times, but it was worth it. It
worth
was pretty
it.
Fun.
A long journey.
Totally worth
what
it.
What about that? Anyone have that dream? First ball, home run, major league? Because if I was a baseball player, hand up. I would have had that dream. That's the reality. It's incredible. Now, you talked to us during the break about density of wood.
Yeah.
And all right, pitch that question. No pun intended. It was really. To Charles. Go for it.
All right. Well, when I went through my struggles, so I started struggling a little bit, and I actually thought that I would use a lighter, smaller bat, that it would help me. And a hitting coach told me, you're a power hitter. The bigger, harder, heavier, more dense wood would be more useful for you.
That's what I'm saying.
I knew that was coming. I knew
course.
That, I knew that was coming.
You can't say all those words together and not expect me to do something with it.
And so, honestly, I started using it, but mentally I couldn't adjust and say, man, if I use a heavier bat, I always thought it was going to slow down my hands. It was going to do this. And so I wasn't.
So you're
able
thinking, let me get around on the swing quicker, and a lighter bat will help me do that. I'll get around on the swing quicker. I can meet the ball faster. But then your pitching coach is saying, no.
Hitting coach is saying,
you see how much I know about this sport. He's saying, you need a heavier bat because you're a power hitter.
Yeah, so what happens is he said, lighter bat, since it's lighter, your body, you try more. When it's a heavier bat, you try to do less. But also, when a heavier, and this is my question, is when a heavier billet of wood, so when they start making a wood bat, it's a piece of lumber, and they move it down. So there's heavier billets, there's denser wood, there's harder wood.
Right.
So if you use a heavier bat, when it hits the ball, the ball's going to go further. And so I got convinced when I started struggling, started using this bat. First game I used the bat, I hit two home runs, and I was like, all right, this is pretty cool. And then when I would hit balls on not the sweet spot part of the bat, they were still leaving the park, and I was like, complete sold. And nowadays, in older times, guys used to use much heavier bats, and it was a big difference. Now everyone wants to use a lighter bat, and I still try to convince guys like, dude,
You should go with the heavier bat.
The bigger, heavier bat. Yeah. Everybody knows once you go bigger, heavier bat.
Okay, Charles, so that's our question.
Chuck.
Okay.
Tell us feelings about big, heavy wood.
This just got weird.
You couldn't resist
look,
it.
Chuck, you are the expert here on good wood, but I can tell you a little bit about the wood that goes in a baseball bat. The thing is, of course, the major leagues have the rules, right? Just like you, the NFL requires you to inflate your balls to a certain pressure, whether or not you want to.
Okay.
The same is true with baseball bats. You can only have a certain length, certain width, certain amount of pine tar, certain density, things like that. Okay.
Okay.
And you may remember there was a controversy some years ago about people putting cork in your bat.
Right.
You open it up, you put some spongy stuff inside, and you cap it off, and you make the ball bounce a little bit off of your bat a little bit more. So here's the physics, right, JP? Your batting coach was correct in that if you have a heavier bat, you swing it around and you are creating more momentum in your bat so that when you transfer that momentum to the ball, when you hit it, it will go farther. The problem, of course, is that it requires more torque. You have to generate that extra turning of your wrists and your arms, elbows eventually in order to move that bat head fast enough to transfer that momentum, right? The main issue is the matter of contact. If you can contact a ball pulling while swinging a thicker, heavier bat, your heavier bat is going to work for you. If you can't get the bat around, though, if you don't have the arm strength, if you don't have the wrist strength, then the heaviest bat in the world isn't going to help you because that fastball is going to blow on right by. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, because that's what his coach was saying. You're a power hitter, therefore you need the heavier bat. It makes sense.
Yeah, and to his point, there's guys, I mean, there's different gifts. Guys have their, I was always able to hit a ball far. And so that was my gift. There was guys that can't hit a ball far. Some guys can throw hard. Some guys can't. It's just genetically whatever they have. But that was one thing I was. And so when I was able to start using those heavier bats, it really made a huge, huge difference.
I got a quick question about balls myself because JP's been hit many a time being a catcher, right? I mean, you go down, you get hit square. So just for you, which hurt worse, getting a foul tip in the cup, or was it just a ball that hit the dirt and came up and hit you square on?
Oh, that's
can you share a story with us?
I have a great story about
you
that,
do.
Actually. Yeah, so...
are you comfortable?
Yeah, density.
Density.
For the dudes will understand this a little bit more, I think. But so first off, there's this thing called the Nutty Buddy. You guys should check it out. It's actually a cup.
It's called a cup.
Wait a minute. Say it again now.
Oh, no.
Say this again now.
You need to watch this YouTube video.
The Nutty Buddy.
That's correct.
And this is a production cup.
That's right. That's two compartments.
Two compartments.
Yeah. So, but it's... Check it out on YouTube. The dude, the way he advertises it is he stands in front of a pitching machine and just takes a ball
and just takes them
square in the in the cup. And it actually
now see that works unless I find him later on that same night with a dominatrix.
And then he's a masochist.
And then I'm like, okay, dude, now you're just you're fooling people. But go ahead.
So
the Nutty Buddy.
So I've actually have there's a lot of umpires that wear Nutty Buddies nowadays. Thankfully, but the protection from down up is not the best. So foul balls,
right?
One time, I got a foul ball,
right,
and hit in the dirt.
So it's ricocheting
straight up,
right? It's like a scene from that. I brought up James Bond earlier, but remember when they pulled that seat out from under James Bond and they sat him down? Go ahead. Casino Royale, the reason. Go ahead.
So I literally am in such pain, I hop off the field into the bathroom that's in the dugout.
Right.
And so the trainer's obviously chasing me down at this point, like, dude, there's a game going on.
Right.
And so I pull down my pants and I'm like, just tell me it's not bleeding. Tell me it's not bleeding.
Lord Jesus.
And so, sure enough, I wasn't bleeding. Was able to get back.
You out went onto back and played.
Finish it out. That night at the bar, and again, this is a little much, but that night at the bar, it was a little tougher
little
to sit down. But
little ginger.
Once a few whiskeys deep, and I was good to go.
I did have a serious question real quick, though. So
go for it.
The speed of the bat, right?
Yeah.
If the speed of the bat is the same as the speed of the ball when it hits and come up and hits him, does that mean that the ball is going to stay at the same speed? Does the speed of the bat impact the speed of the ball
Interesting.
Coming off the bat?
Right.
I'm sorry we got a graphic
discussion
here.
By the way.
I did want to know something physically. Like, now there's something called exit velocity off a bat.
Right.
So it's exit velocity.
Exit velocity.
You want a certain exit velocity coming off your bat, and you know. So.
By the way, on a 90-mile-an-hour pitch, what was the exit velocity off of the ground to JP's balls?
You really don't know. It could be higher, it could be lower, it could be the same.
Can you explain exit velocity to a guy who has to talk about exit velocity all the time but can't wrap his head around it?
Exit velocity is just very simply how fast the ball leaves the bat, right? Your bat's coming in, ball's coming in, they hit each other, and this was going this way, and then it goes that way. The ball, all you need to know, exit velocity, it depends on too many factors to predict at any given time. But there's two things that are important, right? Not only is you have to get the speed of the ball off the bat, you have to figure out what the angle of the ball off the bat is, right? If you are hitting, I don't care if the ball is a bat, the ball is coming off the bat at 100 miles an hour or 50 miles an hour or 60 miles an hour. If you don't follow Wee Willie Keeler, hit them where they ain't, it's still an out, right? So the bat speed thing matters because you have to be able to get around on a 100 mile an hour fastball. You got these guys now who are throwing 100 every day, right? I mean, Odalis, guys like that. But really, if you have a, if you're really trying to figure out how to optimize your ability to hit, it's not the speed that matters. It's whether or not you can get the ball to where the fielders aren't. If gotcha. You're trying to hit a home run, right, you want to take an angle that goes up. I know that hitting coaches tell your people try to hit line drives, but really if you're trying to, if you're a power hitter and you want to hit out of the park, you hit it at a 45 degree angle.
Up. Right.
Okay, right? Charles, I think JP has another question.
Yeah, so another thing.
Activated your mind. Your little squirrel's getting really busy.
Oh, no, I love it. I love talking this because so then some of the furthest home runs, some of the furthest home runs I ever hit, I realized in the barrel, the seams were indented into the bat. And so there's a miss. I don't know. They always used to say you caught a seam. If you hit a ball a certain super, super long distance, it was a difference between hitting it in the, I don't know, what would you call that?
White part of the
white part of the baseball or
the space.
Or the
or right on the scene.
Because if I, because again, you know.
So
with
wait
Maple,
a minute. Are you saying that you have actually looked at a bat after you've hit a home run, and the seam of the ball is indented?
So in Maple, I mean, Ash, you can see it a little bit, but in Maple, if you hit a ball square, because guys always want to clean their bats too. Another thing is guys always clean their bats because you want to see where you're hitting the ball on the bat because there's a sweet spot. So you want to be able. It's all the things that go into it. But when you hit, since it's a clean bat. When you hit a ball good,
right.
I know exactly where I hit it because you can see, if, especially the longer home runs, you see the seams, the indention of the seams on the bat. So I just want to know if that was, if that makes sense, if that's
and
science.
Does that make a difference, Charles, the hitting the seam or hitting the white space? Does that make a difference and why?
Let me tell you two ways that it could make a difference. Okay. One way is that the white part of the ball is slipperier than the seams.
Okay.
So if you catch the seams, you may be able to hit the ball with a more clean shot without slippage. So that, like, you know, in a foul tip, what happens is you catch a piece of the ball and it spins away. But if you hit it on the seams, you might be able to get a little more friction so that even if it's not exactly square, you might be able
so
to get
it without slipping off. So it's the same reason why the pitcher – it's the same reason why the pitcher grips the seams.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The bat is gripping the seams the same way the pitcher throws the ball.
Excellent point.
That's awesome.
Creates more spin.
Charles, I have a thought for you. If we sort of cut across all Major League Baseball rules, what would be the perfect material to make?
To cork a bat.
A bat. So as a power hitter like JP could do his thing and not worry about it.
Tell us from an astrophysics standpoint, yes, how please. Can we cheat best at this game?
If I want the perfect bat, I would actually use an aluminum bat.
Really?
JP, you probably remember from college, right? That ball would just fly off that aluminum bat.
Yeah, it's scary.
So why is that? JP, by the way, when you were in college, did you love playing with an aluminum bat?
I was a huge aluminum bat guy in college, yeah. Nice. Really big fan. Silver, shiny, very, very nice.
You're taking this in another direction, Mr. Nice. You are.
Okay.
You got your own little show going on. I didn't do it this time.
JP did that one. I'm
no,
sorry.
No, I obliged. You started that.
Look,
I'm going to have to separate you two.
But no, seriously, why is aluminum such a great material and why does it work better?
Okay, aluminum is very light for its it's still heavier than wood, right? Denser than wood, I should say.
Yeah.
But you can make it kind of hollow. The typical aluminum bat isn't filled all the way through with aluminum, so you've got some space in the middle. So you've got this sort of ability to ricochet, bounce back and forth a little bit, that elasticity, right? That was the second point about hitting a ball in the laces that matters, right? Because as JP was saying, you hit the ball in the laces. What you're getting is a little extra compression, right? The laces are up by a fraction of an inch. And if you hit that lace just right, get a little extra compression, you have a little bit longer to transfer more energy from the bat to the ball. And therefore, you can get a better launch of the ball. That's
it's basically a spring load is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
And so if you have an aluminum bat that's got a little bit of give to it, a little bit of hollowness in it, you're just going to have a longer period of time to transfer energy, and therefore you get a little bit extra rebound off of that. I don't know if JP that makes sense to you in terms of, I don't know if you ever can feel this, right? The contact with the ball is just a fraction of a second, but you ever feel like when you hit a ball really, really well, it seems to hang on the bat just that little tiny bit longer than when you just get a piece of it?
Honestly, it's almost the opposite. When you hit a ball super square with a wood bat, you don't feel it, which is I don't know how to
You know what? I thought that's why they called it the sweet spot, is because there's no reverberation in your hands through the bat.
Yeah, when I hit a ball good, I knew as soon as I hit it, I was like, that was sexy.
That was it.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. Yeah, I hit that right.
Okay. Yeah. Right, we're going to take a break. Seems like the right time, doesn't it, really? Chuck, go and have a cold shower. You got a couple of minutes. Right, we'll have some sexy baseball when we get back. Stick around.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen, remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
Welcome back to Playing the Science. I'm Gary O'Reilly.
And I'm Chuck Nice.
Yeah, okay.
What we're going to do is we're going to do our final segment, but we're going to open it up to you guys.
Right, questions from the floor, please. You must have some. Caleb, we have quite a
few people who have their hands up.
Choose the victim of your choice. There you go. Excellent. Sir, please introduce yourself.
My name's Jason. We're here at South by Southwest, and a big focus of things here have been virtual reality and augmented reality.
Yes.
I just wanted to maybe get a sense from JP or maybe from Charles how that's currently being used as far as sports performance enhancement.
Cool.
And how might it be used in the future.
All right. Thank you, Jason. Nice. Just to direct you to a Playing with Science show that's already up.
Yes.
Regarding how technology is changing football, and that would be American football.
Yes.
We do address exactly that issue, but...
No, absolutely. And by the way...
It's free for go and grab, and you'll hear a lot more than we could explain to you in terms of this answer now.
And by the way, just for the distinction's sake, So the virtual reality is completely immersive. That's where you put on the goggles and you are in that world without leaving where you are. The augmented reality is Terminator. So remember Terminator when he landed and he looked around and was like, and he saw all the different stats. That's augmented reality. So exactly what you said is great. So Holden, what is MLB doing with that?
Well, right now it's more viewing, and it's starting to – it's not virtual reality whatsoever, but they're doing real-time analytics.
Okay.
So what we're doing, we're talking about root efficiency. Now, root efficiency would be a guy playing the outfield. Is he taking the most direct path to catching the ball? And the second that he catches the ball, boom.
Wow.
Actually, they're working on time.
So it's vectoring.
Huh? Yeah. There you go. Yeah. So they're looking at that, looking at root. How fast was his initial jump?
Yep.
And what they're trying to do that way, so that would be the Terminator way of doing
it. Right, that's the Terminator.
Is calculating how quickly and how efficiently somebody, an outfielder, is getting to a ball. They're doing a lot defensively.
So is this in-game or training?
This is in-game while you're viewing. A lot of the things that we're looking at right now is trying to make baseball more exciting, okay? And seriously, I mean,
it's there are
a lot of nice bats, but the biggest knock on baseball is it's boring, and we're trying to get more people involved in it.
Listen, Holden, you had me at nice
because
bat.
every other sport like NFL and soccer are using the GPS trackers, they're using the radio transmitters and the microchips in the pads. So, yeah.
Now, as far as the VR goes, that's interesting because I've talked to guys in Major League Baseball. They say that they really don't trust it yet. They don't trust it to where they can bring it to their players. Let's say you're in the batting cage. You're taking actual hacks. But there is virtual reality. Let's say you were facing Randy Johnson and you're using this virtual reality. I guess maybe they haven't perfected it to the point to where you guys would feel comfortable. I know in NASCAR, there are guys, the drivers –
Put the VR on,
and there's the course there.
You know why? Because NASCAR, those cars cost a crap load of money. So when it's better to crash the virtual car than the real car. But JP, would you, as a player, feel as though you would benefit from something where you could be in an environment where you're practicing the same thing over and over again without being in an actual game day situation?
Immensely. I think it's huge, and I think it's going to change sports just in football, how they're having guys go under center and being able to read defenses before, because the one thing I did learn and I didn't know as a rookie, and everyone talks about experience, and I used to just be like, all right, dude, stop with the experience. But that's why guys continue to get better through their career, because the more times that I could see a pitcher, so if I face a guy 10 times, 20 times. That's why some of these veterans, people are like, why are they so good? Because when I face a guy 50 times, unless he completely invents a new pitch, I know everything that he's got. And so if I can sit there and watch what this pitch does over and over and over and over, it's going to make a huge difference. Now, like to your point, is how real is it? Because I don't want to be able to sit there and watch all these things, and then when I get into the game, not be the same thing. And then even to the point of, and this is scientifically, Charles, is when you're thinking, they always say when you're thinking, it's too late. So if I'm in the box and I don't trust my eyes and I have to think, okay, is that this, or the other, I'm done. I got no chance. So if another part is being over-informed, and that's the thing that, for baseball – now, for drivers, I have a friend who's an IndyCar driver, and he loves the virtual reality because they can race on the track before they ever get into it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think it's going to change the game. Right now in baseball, the only thing that they used to do was they have a screen. The Yankees have it, and some teams don't really have it. Some guys do. It's a screen, and so they'll put the pitcher that's you're facing, and there's a little hole out of the screen, and the dude just – the ball comes out of there, but that's more just for timing sake and purposes. Because if I can, and what I mean by timing for the people that don't know baseball is like, if I'm hitting and the guy has a leg kick and it's a certain leg kick, or if his windup is a certain tempo, I'm going, everything is timing. I'm going off of that pitcher. So if I can get his timing down, that's half the battle. And so that's more than anything, but yeah, I think, more and more you can see something and you don't have to think and your eyes can just – you were there before it happened. And then, of course, I think virtual reality is going to be a huge and integral part of the sports.
Super cool, man.
That Jason, does that satisfy you? Fabulous. Right, please, our next victim.
Oh, other questions?
She's very keen, isn't she?
I know people here. So this is more on the behavioral science side, a question for JP. I've always wondered, watching 162 games a year, you get to know who the umpires are and who's cycling through and who's at home plate. So I've always wondered how much you factored that in to their differences of how they call a pitch and whether or not in the box, and then also how that's changed now that viewers at home can actually see where the pitch ended up.
Yeah, that's a really great question. I mean, seriously.
You're on the spot.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Yeah. Like, because different umpires have to call games differently. Well, you've got to know that.
Even though the rules are the same.
Even though the rules are the same.
So we, in baseball, there is literally, I would get a sheet every game, and that said, these are the cold and hot zones of that umpire. So some umpires may have a higher strike zone than others. Right. Obviously, the strike zone is a strike zone, but they have tendencies like anybody else. And then also you have to – part of it is being a psychologist back there, because a lot of these guys, their egos are – a lot of them think that they're the gatekeepers of the sport.
And so do you ever do this?
It's no.
Just like, strike! And you're just like, good call, man. That was a good call.
Oh, dude. You have
I really appreciate what you do, brother.
Hey, serious? No, but no lie though. There's guys that you have to like pump their tires. Like, dude, you were freaking so good tonight. Like, you were unbelievable.
Wow, dude.
And then there's some.
You got
guys,
new contacts, didn't you? You got new contacts. That's great.
But then there's some guys that legit they will try to stick it to you to the point where I've watched guys backtalk the umpire, and I'm back there, and I know that whatever we throw, he's calling it a strike because he's pissed off at the guy that's
he's
here.
He's mad.
Yeah. So, there's so many things. We could talk forever, but there's so, even to the point of, if you ever watch, when a guy gets upset at a strike,
right,
they don't look straight back at the umpire.
No.
They'll put their head down and they'll.
Right. They start scuffing the dirt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
If you look back at the umpire, their ego. They know because...
Oh, my God. So it's like working for J-Lo. If you look her in the eye, you're fired.
Yeah, done. So because what happens is...
Did that happen to you, Chuck?
Yep.
As an umpire, if I'm looking at the umpire, everybody knows that I'm speaking
right
with him. So he is already...
Don't
right
you
out
eyeball
of
me, boy.
Defensive. Serious. And so that's why guys... Because, again, if you... That's like a sign of disrespect. If you look back there...
Oh, my God. You just gave me such a new perspective on this game. I never would. You know, there's a big debate right now as to whether or not we should allow cameras and computers to call balls and strikes.
No
it's
chance.
It's a huge, huge debate right
no
now.
No chance.
And it's the same reason why we have the replay in the NFL.
So, okay.
After hearing this, I never want to see cameras call balls and strikes, ever.
Well,
because that is awesome.
I say no chance just because... There'll be breaking balls, curveballs, sliders, whatever, that'll hit the dirt. And when they cross the quote-unquote K-zone, it's in the air. It's passing through as a strike, but it's hitting the dirt. There's no way you're calling that a strike. So there's a
so
lot of
So you're saying that this is forever going to be a subjective call.
Yeah. If I can ever have any say in it, but all players would feel the same way. Because, again, also, too, is what – and I'm sure you can speak to this – as well, because this is way over my pay grade, is an education, is we've been talking about moving the strike zone up or down, correct? And part of the reason, because they think that moving the strike zone up is going to make more contact, which it's harder to hit a ball up than down, which that's one thing that they're completely wrong on. But the other one is, the reason why that I think they're trying to move the strike zone is because literally, if you watch the K zone, there'll be pitches that'll pass through at the bottom of the strike zone that hit right behind home plate. There's no way that that could be a strike. But for what they have right now, that's a strike. So there's a lot of things that still have to be ironed out. But again, I wish that they had us mic'd up because it's and then especially
I'd pay extra for that.
And then
too.
when I'm not happy with the umpire, then it gets more interesting and more fun.
And what do you ever? What do you do when you're not happy? Do you say stuff under your breath? Do you just?
Oh
like,
no, I wear them out. Because then there's a point. I'm good with guys and I'm nice to them. But dude,
do you ever talk to the catcher like he's the umpire? You know what I mean? Like so you're batting, right? There's another catcher, right? And He calls a strike, and then you turn back to the catcher, right? And you're like, I ever tell you your mother's a whore? Did I ever tell you that? I mean, I'm just talking to you, not the umpire. Like, you ever?
Oh, all right, funny story. So do you know, you guys know Kawasaki? He's with the Cubs now. I don't know if you guys have seen
Masanori Kawasaki.
Yep. So in Japanese, we used to know this, and he would call the umpires a derogatory term in Japanese.
Sweet.
Politically correct, he would call the person a homosexual, but he would say, he would like look at them and just get all over them and say bad things to them. And he'd do it smiling.
Right.
So us in the dugout.
And so they're thinking guy in Japanese, like, wow, they're such a polite culture.
Yeah.
They really are.
And we would be dying laughing because he'd be looking at the umpire and just ripping him
right
in Japanese, but just smiling the whole way. So it was great because the umpire was like, oh, man, even when I'm not good, this guy is smiling at me, but... We all knew that this dude was just completely tearing him apart.
Let's just hope that there are no umpires listening to this show right now, because he's in trouble.
Yeah.
The secret may be out.
All right, I think we got time for one more question. Who do we have? Sir, what is your name?
My name is Matt, and I'm a science teacher here in Austin, Texas.
Give it up for
yes!
Matt. Now, Matt, before you go on, let me just ask you, what grade do you teach?
I teach Earth and Space Science to high school seniors.
Okay, my condolences.
Well done, you, sir. Congratulations.
I'm so sorry for you, sir. I'm so terribly sorry. But you are a true saint. Good for you.
Thanks.
What's your question?
Dr. Liu, can you make some connections for us between the ball colliding with the bat and galaxies colliding with other galaxies?
It's galaxies colliding, Jerry.
Can.
Yeah.
Galaxies colliding, Jerry. Galaxies colliding. That was a really cool way to bring the whole show together. So cool, from a science teacher to an astrophysicist.
Let me put it this way. The collision of two galaxies is like the collision of two beehives. The stars inside them, just like the bees in the hives, won't actually hit one another. So there's not actually a lot of physical collision, right? So in terms of a bat hitting a ball out of the park, you're not going to have a star hitting another star and knocking it out of the galaxy. But you have something just as cool, if not even cooler, because the gravity of the systems will make them slingshot out without even touching one another. You can throw thousands, millions of stars out into long tidal tails or just flat out into space. You can throw planets out of their solar systems. You can throw moons away from their planets. And all you have to do is to come close enough that your gravity will cause that to fling away. So in a sense, yes, it is too bad that we won't hear the crack of the bat, but we will see fireworks well beyond just one thing hitting another, because you're going to have, in a galaxy colliding with another one, fireworks, celestial, cosmic accident, like.
Yo, man.
Did everybody get it? I want to see
awesome.
That from everybody.
Mind blown. Mind blown.
All
Very
right.
nice.
Baseball and fireworks. All right.
Wow, this has been a great show, man.
Hasn't it?
This is really cool.
I'd like to thank everybody that sat through this and hopefully has enjoyed it. Yes, thank you. And we want to thank everybody at South by Southwest for allowing us to be here and to do our thing.
Thank you to Andrew at TuneIn and TuneIn. And, of course, our guest.
JP, please give it up. Thank you. Holden Kushner, the man with the inquiring mind. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Holden.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So man that needs no introduction. I think you love him if you've never met him before. Please give it up for the man on screen.
Chuck Liu! I'm Chuck Nice.
I'm Gary O'Reilly. This has been Playing with Science. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
You.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.